Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. And the British row with Russia just continues to get worse. Not only are diplomats being expelled by both sides, but now the Brits have searched a Russian airplane at Heathrow Airport in London and said they were searching for banned substances that could be dangerous. Where is all of this going and how dangerous is it getting? Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on this debate.
On Friday, the Russian Foreign Ministry summoned envoys of 23 countries which have expelled Russian diplomats over the poisoning of double agent Sergei Skripal. Moscow has also declared 60 U.S. diplomats as persona non grata and has given them until April 5th to leave the Russian soil. The U.S. Consulate General in St. Petersburg will be closed. In total, more than 150 foreign diplomats will be expelled by Russia in retaliation for the expulsion of its diplomats by the U.S. and its allies.
There are tit-for-tat measures regarding other countries and the number of people who will leave the Russian Federation from the diplomatic missions. That's all for now. We don't want just to respond to unacceptable actions addressed to us under severe pressure from the US and Great Britain under the pretext of the so-called Skripal case. We will not simply react to what the Anglo-Saxon element is doing to us, making everyone follow an anti-Russian course. We want to establish the truth.
Lavrov slammed the UK's conclusions about the Skripal poisoning case amid ongoing investigations as a, quote, mockery of international law. The Russian Foreign Ministry also accused the US of encouraging and fomenting a smear campaign against Russia. It called on Washington to reconsider its anti-Russian approach and stop reckless actions detrimental to the country's bilateral relations.
Our measures will be adequate. There should be no concessions and indulgences. Once you show weakness, they will go even further. It is possible to stop these mad dogs and their accomplices in another way. Show them that everything they initiate will receive an answer.
Later in the day, British authorities searched a plane operated by Russia's Aeroflot at London Heathrow Airport without offering any reason. Russia's foreign ministry denounced the move as a provocation and a breach of international law. Meanwhile, the U.S. has decided to take Russian TV network RT off air in Washington on April 1st.
The Russian Foreign Ministry has talked about an intensification of provocations targeting Russian diplomats in the U.S. It says diplomats whom Washington planned to expel were offered assistance in exchange for unofficial relations on a mutually beneficial basis. The ministry noted that the Russian diplomats are literally attacked by the intelligence agency's proposals. Марина Картунова, Press TV, Moscow.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, former U.S. diplomat James Dattras out of Washington, D.C., and foreign policy in focus and author of Untold, The Real Story of the U.N., Ian Williams out of New York. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off with Ian Williams. Why has London moved so rapidly with not only accusing Moscow of the poisoning of the double spy without any concrete evidence, but also with starting a major diplomatic row by expelling Russian diplomats?
Well, it's a wonderful diversion. The problem is there are no heroes or angels on either side in this. Both the US and UK have been in some ways provocatively anti-Russian ever since the end of the Cold War, and this is just the latest episode. But on the other hand, the Russians do have a recidivist record of bumping off people who've left, the Litvinov case, the poisoning. So, I mean, if I were on a jury, I could not bring myself to vote guilty on the present evidence, but I don't think I would vote not guilty. If I were betting on a horse, I would say probably there is some evidence. But the trouble is that Theresa May hasn't produced that evidence.
Well, why wouldn't she produce it? Let me just interrupt you. Then why wouldn't she introduce it? Why wouldn't the Brits introduce it if they had evidence?
I don't want to apologize for them, but I can hypothesize that they might have evidence from an informant that they don't want to reveal about what happened. We're in the murky world of spying here. But there is a procedure under international law. The conventions on the prevention of chemical warfare say that they're supposed to hand their samples over, both to the Russians if they're accusing them, and to the labs of the Office for the Prevention of Chemical Warfare itself. And she rushed before she'd even done that. And Jeremy Corbyn rightly took her to task for that. while not discounting, let's say, the possibility, if not even the probability, that there was Russian involvement in these poisonings, he carefully pointed out that there are procedures to follow. And you don't really, I don't want to sound too dramatic, but you don't really risk restarting the Cold War and possibly triggering World War III on idle slander. You really have to produce evidence.
Okay.
Now, Theresa May has been persuasive enough. A lot of Europeans don't want to go along with this. They get their gas from Russia. They have a lot of trade relations with Russia. They don't want the embarrassment and inconvenience of all of this. And even in London, remember, the London property market, which is dominated by Theresa May's friends, are making out like bandits from all of the kleptocrats who fled Russia with their rubles and dollars to set up in London. So there's lots of people who don't really want this. So, you know, you could say there's no smoke without fire. I still haven't seen the fire, but there's a tremendous amount of smoke, and there's a lot of reasons why she should backpedal on it.
Okay, stay with me, Ian Williams. Let me get James Jotras in on this. What do you think about all of this? Is there a smoking gun? Our guest, Ian Williams, says there is a lot of smoke. How do you assess what's going on?
Well, I think he hit the nail on the head when he said you don't start a new Cold War and risk the prospect of war over something this uncertain. Yet that is exactly what the British government, supported by the United States and other governments, are doing, which maybe leads one to the conclusion that really has nothing to do with the Skripal case, that this is a planned provocation. It is a planned scuttling of bilateral relations, a form of political warfare against Russia, which I believe is ultimately aimed at regime change, about getting Mr. Putin out, about casting a cloud over his election, about undermining Russia's hosting of the FIFA World Cup this year, to try to put political pressure on to treat Russia as though it were Iraq or Syria or Libya or some other pipsqueak country we can kick around and overturn its government and reinstall a nice puppet like Boris Yeltsin, which is what the establishment here in Washington would like. I honestly do not think they comprehend how dangerous the course upon which they have embarked. And it really has nothing to do with Skripal. Frankly, as far as Skripal goes, I don't think there's much smoke there at all. I think the explanation that have been given so far are highly suspicious, and all the evidence that I've seen is against the likelihood that the Russians had anything to do with it. And frankly, I think this is like so many other things we've seen, for example, like the accusations against the Syrian government on chemical weapons use based on no evidence whatsoever.
All right, and Ian Williams, in the middle of this, why would the British suddenly search now a Russian airliner unless they wanted to make matters worse?
They're making the points. I mean, I think there's a feeling among some of them that the Russians, on the one hand, they're getting uppity, but the other hand, they have been doing things with what they wouldn't have done 5 or 10 years ago. They're taking advantage of the let's say the instability and idiocy in Western governments to push their fellows out. We have a prime minister in Britain who has zero support from our own party. The only thing that's keeping her in is that none of the party can agree on who to replace her with. We have Donald Trump in Washington, about whom enough said. And it's funny that both of these parties, the Conservative Party in Britain and the Republican Party in Washington, have been the beneficiaries of Russian support and money. Certainly Britain's Russian oligarchs have been big supporters of the Conservative Party. So it's almost puzzling about which agenda is playing out here. There's certainly a strong feeling in Britain that there's not much love lost for the Russian oligarchs, because there are homeless people on the streets of London because these people, having looted Russia, are now looting London by buying up properties and keeping them empty for speculation. So it's not a totally unpopular move, but the British have traditionally worried about warmongers, and I think that they are getting worried about what is actually happening here, why it's happening, and until she produces really concrete evidence, she's rather unconvincing. And what we'll get back to what the real agenda is. But remember, she's managed to sell all these other European countries on it. So I can't help wondering if there's some killer piece of evidence, and first of all, that she's showing them, and secondly, whether that evidence is real or is it as fabricated as what Colin Powell showed at the UN about Iraq.
Okay, well, what about that James Jatras that we have now, some other European countries on board? Do you think it's perhaps because of evidence that Theresa May, the British government, has shown, or possibly is it something else? And like with any other dispute or problem, we always look at who would benefit from this situation. So I want to look at that aspect of it, too. Who would benefit from the poisoning of this double agent?
Well, who would benefit from the poisoning of the double agent is the elements of the deep state in the United States and also their friends in the United Kingdom, who were terrified at Donald Trump's repeated insistence that he wanted to improve ties with Moscow. My colleague says, enough said, Donald Trump. Oh, I don't think enough said at all. When he said he wanted to improve ties with Moscow, that was taken as a direct mortal threat by an establishment whose very bread and butter depends on enmity with Moscow, and that, I think, is what is at the root of this whole Russiagate nonsense that's been going on for over a year, and whose fingerprints are all over that. The Steele dossier, MI6, Christopher Steele, with his shady outfit Orbis, which also has connections to, believe it or not, Sergei Skripal. There's something very, very shady going on in the United Kingdom, and they've got the United States like a dog, the tail that they're wagging. And it's very interesting. John Kirby, the former State Department spokesman, said that this episode shows, with America supporting Britain on this, that Donald Trump is out of the loop, that the real professionals that they talk to behind closed doors, they're in charge of the process now. We've got the adults in the room. That's what this is all about. I think this is all designed to a very large extent to make sure that there could be no new detente between the United States and Russia, and that Donald Trump and Mr. Putin cannot meet, cannot work out our differences, and that the British are taking the lead with their shady little friends in MI6 and GCHQ and the CIA and NSA and so forth to try to bring down any possibility of such a rapprochement.
What about that, Ian Williams? Your take on what James Jatras has said, that basically there are the powers that be, the deep state, if you want to call them, that actually do not want to see Moscow and Washington actually be close.
Well, sadly, there's very little chance of Washington and Moscow being close. Ever since Boris Yeltsin did his work to destroy the Soviet Union and its economic base, there's no question of parity anymore. One of the big problems was that the U.S. establishment refused to treat Russia in any rational way. They treated it as a defeated power, despite all the promises made to Gorbachev and then later Yeltsin. And that has bred in Russia a great degree of revanchism, of the idea that, you know, we will be great again and we must push back. And that's led the Russians to do some provocative and illegal things, repeatedly. They're pushing the boundaries. And, you know, taking a detached point of view, Voice of America, RT, who cares? CNN, RT. Some difference, but not too much. So you have this sort of parity, but the Americans, of course, don't see it that way. They really look at themselves as the city on the hill, and they think that what applies to others doesn't apply to them. I mean, look, the whole fuss about interference in American elections, you know, who has interfered in more elections worldwide than the Americans over the years, whether it's by sending in troops to just overturn the results, sending in money through fountain, you know, with back channel money to support opposition figures. You know, I've seen this at close hand, watching them grooming opposition successors. So they get indignant when other people do it. I think so. A lot of the accusations about the Russian interference in elections was probably true. But my answer is, so what? You do it. Why can't they do it? And nobody can really answer that question, because they really do think that the US is a special case with a special dispensation to do things that others can't. Now, one of the questions is whether Putin is actually sort of getting ideas above his status and station in terms of the relative power, because Yes, it has a thermonuclear capacity, but that's not that big an asset in strategically. You know, the Soviets don't have a deep water capability. The one task force they sent round to Syria sort of had to stop in for help from NATO bases on the way almost, because it hardly made it to the Syrian coast. Russia is not a major player, which doesn't mean to say, and it's not a totally major player, but doesn't mean to say it shouldn't be treated with respect. You know, it's a powerful country. It needs treating with respect. It needs listening to. It needs people trying to make friends to them, regardless of who's in power. And I'm certainly no fan of Putin. And I think there are even more questions about Putin's election than there were about Trump's. But that's by the by.
Okay.
He is the legitimate
government. Let me get James Jatras back in on this. James Jatras, is this all because of Russia and its success and basically becoming very important in the Middle East region? And we see what a big role it has played in Syria and has been very, very successful. Is that partly of what this is all about?
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with much of what my colleague just said, although I don't agree that Russia's reaction has been provocative. I think it has been reactive and defensive against a full-scale press that has been going on for a couple of decades. But it's precisely that Donald Trump threatened. He said about NATO, a bunch of freeloaders, we don't need them. About Ukraine and Crimea, not our problem. Let the Europeans worry about that. Syria, what the Russians are doing there, he said he praised the Russians and the Iranians and the Syrian army for fighting against Daesh. Can you imagine the alarm bells that set off with the establishment here in Washington? So I think that what we've seen now is the establishment reasserting itself, telling him, and I'm sure in so many words, you may not do that. Now look, just the other day, Donald Trump out of the blue said, hey, Daesh is on the ropes, we're getting out of Syria. Well, let's see if he's allowed to do that. He said he wanted to get out of Afghanistan, and his general said, oh no, Mr. President, don't forget who's in charge here. It's not you. We'll see what happens in Syria. I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical that he's meeting with Kim Jong-un, that his advisors all told him he shouldn't do. I'll be skeptical to see whether that takes place. I think we have inside President Trump a tiny little candidate Trump who's fighting to get out, to break free of the things that my colleague described that are leading the world into a new world war. And I don't think these people who are thwarting him realize how dangerous this path is.
Okay, well, Ian Williams, we seem to be deteriorating to almost a Cold War type of relations now, with Russia being portrayed as the pariah. Do you agree, and why would it be beneficial to paint Russia in such an unbelievable way? We see some of the rhetoric coming out of Washington or coming out of London, and basically almost as if they want to close the door on certain types of diplomatic relations. Why do we see it in the way that it is coming down at this time?
I think part of it is there's not that much disclaimability. No sovereign state, especially one that pretends to be democratic, can countenance with equanimity the idea that citizens, adopted or otherwise, or residents, can be killed, as Litvinov was with the umbrella, with impunity. But it is interesting that the poisoned umbrella case was actually sat upon by the British establishment for a long time. They weren't interested. It was outraged citizens who pursued the case and said something must be done here. But then relations with Russia were much better, and they were prepared to allow Moscow to indulge its whims in this way. No, but currently, it's a case of sending signals. And the problem with signals like this is you get to a Sarajevo 1914, the signal, when the signal rockets go up, they might not come down the way that you want them. And that's the real point. There aren't any adults in the room. I certainly don't think Donald Trump is an adult. I think he's a creature of whim and whimsy with a completely insubstantial background in geopolitics and ethics, come to think of it. So there's no telling what he's going to do. And this unpredictability is bad for everybody. A Cold War was a stable situation. You had the world divided pretty much into two blocks, and each of them was responsible for policing their own. And now we have all of these. I mean, it's like we're playing with a suit of 52 jokers. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
Okay.
The Europeans are unstable. Merkel is sort of is wobbly. Theresa May is a no-hoper and has about, you know, a week's worth of credibility at any given moment until one of her colleagues stabs her in the back. Donald Trump is sort of depends what he saw on TV last night, what the policy is going to be today. And the staff is constantly changing. You know, Putin is relatively stable on this one, but he does seem to have got complacent. He's okay. He has done things that he shouldn't have done.
All right. Well, James Jantras, there seems to be double standard because we look at the controversial death of Dr. David Kelly, a British scientist and a weapons expert who in 2003 said that the British government had sexed up a dossier on Iraq's weapons capability to go to war with the Arab country. And he was found dead only a day after he appeared before MPs at the British Parliament. But we didn't see all of this and extensive investigations. Talk to me about what I see as double standards. Do you agree?
Well, it sounds like Mr. Williams would like to respond to that. I'm not familiar with that particular case. I do take issue that he takes it as a given that Litvinenko was killed by the Russian government when his father is quite adamant that he does not believe that this case. He actually believes it was the Ukrainians who were behind it because they have among the most to gain. Again, cui bono? Who benefits from bad relations? I'm not in a position to speculate on that, but to treat it as a given that the Russians and Mr. Putin personally, just out of their sheer evil impulses, go around bumping people off, I do not take it as proven. And I think it's that kind of a mentality that is leading us toward a Sarajevo moment here. We have so many people in the West who want to talk about Putin is a thug, Putin is evil, he's Hitler. Okay. This is not 1939. This is a 1914 situation. If somebody messes up, very, very bad things could happen.
All right. And with that brings us to the end of this program. Thank you both for being with us. Former U.S. diplomat James Jantras out of D.C., foreign policy and focus and author of Untold, a real story of the U.N. Mr. Williams out of New York. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. See you next time.